The Huddle with Rich and Arnie, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle with Rich and Arnie, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It is a Tuesday, 7th day of November. All in a count to four. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on? Stop choking. What's going on, man?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I just had about my ninth Mountain Dew.
So. You sound like hell. Why don't you know
Thank
that?
You. But at least I look good.
I ate so much, guys, for lunch that I may have to lay down. I feel like we should be doing the show.
What, are you tired?
Oh, I'm tired. I'm
what time
full.
Did you get up today? 7? Get out the violins.
I have to lay down. I'm serious. I would like to do the show laying down with a pillow right now.
Well, maybe
what
we could switch shifts for a couple of days. See how you like that. That's fun.
Yeah, but at least when you're done with the mornings, you get to go home and take a nap.
Right. That's true. Except today.
Except for today, because we had a special
special work
function.
Event.
Yeah. So we had a special work event out here, and it was a lot of fun. We still have one more thing to do, but we chow down.
Ugh.
Like food is going to be forbidden after today.
And we've just eaten 57 pounds of food for lunch.
Each.
We have a meeting
each.
Of
each. Yes, yes.
We have a meeting about an hour and a half later, and there's this giant pile of candy. I thought it had gone away.
And you know what's so sick about it? Ugh. I ate the candy. And I was not one bit hungry.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if it's out there, I've got to eat it.
Now,
you know?
Is there some sort of – is it like the cocoa in the chocolate, or is there some sort of drug?
No, it's called being big and fat. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Because it's sitting up there, and I know it's sitting up there, and I can't even breathe. I'm so full. But I can't stop.
Right, right.
But you should have gone for the Starburst. That's what I did anyway.
I just finished about five
yes,
of them.
Okay,
the Starburst is better than the chocolate.
He did that also, but I'm stuffing my face, and then – right before the show, I'm like, you ever heard the expression, like, if you're hungover, you go back to the dog that bit you and you're supposed to drink again the next day?
Hair of the dog.
Speak
hair
for yourself. Yeah.
I'm so full, I'm thinking maybe I should go back up and eat some more. I'm serious. I'm not kidding around.
And all I do is say, well, why? I go to the gym every day. Why don't I ever lose weight? Duh.
You ate so much today.
I mean,
we had so much.
We had chicken. We had brisket.
From our friends over at Bluebird Barbecue.
Bluebird Barbecue.
So.
Oh, it was great. It was delicious.
We ate like we were prisoners getting our last meal.
And mac and cheese.
It's yes, like, mac and cheese
the
also.
Mac and cheese in there.
Yeah, that was delicious.
It's going to be in my kitchen in about 4 hours.
I'm serious. I may go into a food coma during the show. If you've ever been in food coma, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It was unbelievable. So I'm ready to go ahead and take a nap. There's no doubt about that. Yesterday, Brady, you didn't show up for hoops yesterday.
Uh-oh. Did not show up. I had to work until 7 o'clock. And by the time you texted me at 7 and said, there's 100 people here, so there's no point in coming.
There was a record-breaking day.
Now, are they all lined up to smash on you?
Pretty much.
Is that what that is?
Pretty
You're
much.
Causing this?
We've now made Monday, Wednesdays at Williston Central School the place to play for ballers.
Did people bring, like, cases of beer? And
no, but I should sell it. I should sell beer and food because there was so many people there. I played two games in an hour and a half. No, I'm serious.
Wow.
Two games in an hour and a half. That's how bad it was. Yeah. It was absolutely packed. And, you know, really, you shouldn't come if your shot is broken and you're not a good baller, okay? And
if you're not good, don't bother coming.
And Arnie's
notice,
there.
Notice who I'm looking at. So,
you're looking at Rich, and you're talking to Jason through the microphone.
Okay, I was looking at you, too.
What are you talking about? My shot is broken. I beat you 21-1.
Well, that's because you're taller than I am, though. But
it's because you're taller.
It was so packed. It was fun, though. I mean, it was good. But the fact that you had to wait. So now Monday, Wednesdays, the place to play in Burlington or wherever. Is going to be Williston Central School.
Can this place buy some advertising? I mean,
they
you're
should.
Clearly
yeah.
the cause.
They should. We have two gyms. I don't know why we don't use the bigger gym, but we use the smaller gym, and it's just nothing but people lined up around the gym, sitting down, and just it's just packed.
Does anybody even acknowledge your existence? I mean, it must. What's the reason why the place
yes,
is suddenly?
Actually,
because people text in all the time.
Yeah,
where can we play? Where do you play?
And there was actually a couple of people that listened to the show. Funny part is they don't say anything to me though while they're there, But then I find out later on they listen to the show. So
they don't say anything because you won't let them speak.
Well, that's probably true, too. That's also true. So, I mean, we've made it now the place to play.
I guess.
So if your shot is broke, don't come out, please. Don't do that. Just really serious ballers also. You know, don't bring any of your loser friends, Brady, okay? The ones that don't know how to play.
I only bring one friend, and he's good.
Don't tell me Craig from Essex. That guy's horrible.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he's listening now.
Absolutely horrible.
21-1.
All right, we got a lot going on today. It is a real busy show. Lots breaking on this Tuesday. Brady, tell everybody what's coming up on the show.
Well, we will keep you aware of what's happening in the developing Roy Halladay situation. Here's what we know. We know somebody lost their life, so our thoughts are with whoever was in that plane and their family. From an athletic standpoint, you hope it's not Roy Halladay, who's a two-time Cy Young winner. And really, Rich, he was Clayton Kershaw before Clayton Kershaw. I mean, when we talked about a guy who hadn't been to the playoffs or hadn't had success and then, you know, on the biggest stage but was a great regular season pitcher, Halladay was that guy for both the Blue Jays and the Phillies. He pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs. He eventually won a World Series. And he's a guy who's probably going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so, and I'll tell you, I mean, you know, I hate to speculate on this, but it's a plane owned by Roy Halladay, and it went down, and he owns the plane, one person died in it.
Question about it, does he have a pilot's license?
I don't know.
Or does he have the plane so somebody else can fly him around? I don't know the situation. So
he was, I mean, as a Sox fan, he was just, you know, and I don't want to just speculate here, but I'm just looking back at his career, and he was about as unhittable as any guy I can remember for the longest time.
Is this like a Payne Stewart situation or more like a Thurman Munson situation? Because Thurman Munson died in a plane crash that he was piloting, I believe. Payne Stewart, somebody else was hit, and it was more about a leak inside the plane put them all unconscious. So I have no idea.
Well, we don't want to speculate until we know. Just on Halladay real quick again, he won 20 games. Three times in his career. He had an ERA under 3. I mean, for 5 years in a row at one point. He had an ERA under 3 many, many times in his career. 16 seasons, it looks as if it's probably 10 times he had an ERA under 3.
The biggest number to me about Halladay, besides all the wins, all the strikeouts, all the domination, is complete games. 67 complete games.
Yeah, those days are over.
I mean, can you imagine that even being touched? At this point?
No. It's not going to touch. And also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how do you say we hope that it wasn't him? Because it was someone.
Right.
So
7 years with an ERA under 3. Also, what's coming up, Tom Karen of Nesson, 4:35. Zach Cox, Nesson, 5 o'clock. We'll get another qualifier for Choose Your All-Star Game as we're in our first full day of that. But first,
I'm sorry. I just wanted you to give the update on Angelo, too, because I have such an infuriating tweet that came out from a college basketball insider that it's going to make you nuts.
LiAngelo Ball, the second of the three Ball brothers. You have Lonzo Ball, you have LaMelo Ball, who's the youngest one. LiAngelo Ball is a freshman at UCLA, arrested for shoplifting.
Reed Forgrave, the ultimate in college basketball.
Oh, I don't. I know Reed Forgrave.
You ready for this one? Yes, people, I understand LiAngelo and his family are rich and that kids do stupid things, but folk are on the biggest issue here. Amateur athletics rake in billions of unpaid labor. This naturally creates a black market. And it's like a 5-thing tweet. What he's trying to say is...
Defending it.
Well, yes, because he's trying to say if you paid these kids, they wouldn't have to go ahead and steal.
Right.
You're talking... Is that not... I mean, seriously, is that not perhaps one of the most insulting things you've heard... Coming from the kid's family who he lives in a mansion now in Southern California. His brother was a number one pick in the NBA draft. His father now is starting this billion-dollar company, and he's got to go ahead. And you're going to defend somebody? If that was my kid, even if it was and I was struggling for a living and it was my kid, I'd give him an earful like you never heard. And if it was rich, he'd get it worse than he would if I was poor.
So if, say, he was from squalor in the swamps of Mississippi and never had a place to live, nothing growing up, survived.
I'm not going to defend it, but I'd be a little bit more understanding.
Okay.
All right?
Is
that fair enough?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. The fact that his last name is Ball, I kind of like it because that just makes dad
And you know
worse.
Reed Forgrave, and you're going to go ahead and I see this, and I'm like, how dare you put something like this
out? No, I don't. I mean, I don't agree with that. Just because I know the guy and I've talked to him before doesn't mean
I
agree.
Look, I understand if you want to make the argument about players getting paid, blah, blah, blah. You want to go through the argument back and forth, that's fine. But don't bring this up and say, well, you know, if we paid the kids, even if he wasn't a millionaire, he's well off. Oh, let's put it like that.
Right. He does not, of all people, he does not need to go out and shoplift.
Makes no sense. Someone explain to me, when you have the money to pay, why do you shoplift? And don't tell me it's the thrill. I don't buy into that garbage. Yeah. When you have the money to afford it, why don't you buy it? Why do you steal
especially
it?
Especially now, you can't do it because there's a camera everywhere
at
every store.
Too. He's
famous. Oh, yeah, and he's famous.
The answer is youth and stupidity or peer pressure. Or
he's
or
got
both.
An illness. He may have an illness. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a stretch for shoplifting.
Why else would you put your whole... Isn't that putting your career in
what
jeopardy?
What did he shoplift? Did he steal hundreds of thousands worth of stuff? Or did he steal a... What did he steal? Did he steal a...
That's not even the point.
Piece of bubble gum?
Is that the point, though? No, but is
Cam Newton stole a laptop. He ended up just fine. No, shoplifting does not jeopardize your entire career.
Well, you know, in Cam Newton's defense, I hate to do that, he didn't come from... did he come from well means like the Ball family?
No, but I'm just saying it didn't ruin his career. Bottom line is this, as usual, if you have talent, then you can overcome things. Now, LiAngelo Ball doesn't have the talent that Lonzo Ball does, so this is, you know, they're not going to overlook things like you overlook with Cam Newton.
He's also in the media, in the limelight. His father, what's his father going to say something about that? He's like, you know?
And that's the sad thing, and I've said this before, and I'll say it in this case too. I almost am happy to hear it just because it makes his father. No, but I feel so bad for these kids because I sit there and I look at Lonzo Ball's stats every night, and I look, yes, he went 3-for-13. Awesome. His dad's pissed.
But you know what, though? Why would you feel bad for kids? Look what, you know what? Seriously, your dad made you a number one pick in the NBA draft. The other kids are going to go to UCLA. Everybody's getting an education. You're part of this billion-dollar company.
Right.
Yeah, I wish somebody would treat me as bad as he treats his kids.
Well, there are certain people I just can't cheer for, and then he's one of them. He's at the top of the list.
I wish somebody would treat me that bad, right? Please, right now, treat me as bad as you want and make me part of it.
You've got some lottery tickets at our event
Exactly. All right, what else do we got going? I just thought that was crazy how you could steal when you're a billion-dollar guy. But go ahead. What else do we got, Brady?
Well, let's start with this. Bill Belichick responded to the ESPN, the magazine article that came out last week. He called parts of it fake news. And just for a refresher, there's kind of three points to this article. The first one is, it's largely on Tom Brady on the TB12 method on how he intends to play until his mid-40s, what exactly he's doing. Is it possible? Why does he have to succeed in this to make his brand relevant and justify its existence? That's number one. Two, there's a quote that says, a quote, collision is coming between Bill Belichick and Brady's trainer and fitness guru, Alex Guerrero. There's two, Belichick was confident he could win a Super Bowl with backup quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. And three, Belichick plans to coach long enough so that he can establish, quote, a truly dynastic succession for his sons.
Good.
So he called part of it. He said a lot of it was fake news and attributed to unnamed sources, and he's not a big fan of it.
I'm just surprised he addressed it. Go ahead and starting with there. He usually doesn't address stuff like that. So if he did, it either shows me that there's a lot of truth to it or that it really bothered him or both. So I'm guessing both. I think there's some truth.
Bothered or both?
Yeah, I think there's truth that bothered him, and I think there's truth. I think it bothered him, and I feel like he wanted to address it. That's the first thing on that, okay? So as for coming to a head with this guy Guerrero and Brady, something's there. Let's face it. Something's going on. I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but I feel the animosity. You know what I'm saying? Don't you?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
No. Don't you feel the animosity, or am I making that up, or am I kind of exaggerating that?
I believe a good portion of this story. I texted with Seth Wickersham yesterday, who is the co-author of the story. He told me he stood behind his story 100%. He told me he stood behind it 100%. When you talk specifically about Guerrero and Brady, we had the other co-author on last Friday. It was Thomas Juneau. This is what he told us about the relationship with Belichick, Brady, Guerrero.
Well, I mean, I don't really know if Tom and Bill are close. I mean, I think that they've had more of a working relationship than anything else. You know, what I do know is that the person who Brady is closest to is his, fitness consigliere, Alex Guerrero, and that, creates complications between him and Belichick.
This just reeks to me of a Patriots witch hunt, and I know you don't agree with that, but if this is Jacksonville and the quarterback, does anybody care?
But see, it's different. We're talking about it because it is the Patriots. So this is now the chicken and the egg story.
Right.
Now, Seth Wickersham got in hot water over the – we had him on, and, man, it was August or so, or maybe it was even before that, but you were gone for the summer. We had him on when he basically said that the Patriots broke the Seahawks, and there was all this infighting in Seattle about – what the players thought of Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, all of the above, infighting there. We had Seth Wicker. So he produces these kind of pieces that dig up dirt. That doesn't make them untrue. But, of course, they're not going to come out in the locker room and say, this is factual, but I believe a large portion of this.
As a Pats fan, you just gave me these three things to think about. A collision is coming between Belichick and Guerrero. I bet that collision is mellow, and it lasts about 5 minutes.
Oh, no.
And Belichick.
No. Really? Nothing's ever mellow with him.
Why? Is this going to be Deflategate 2?
Nothing's ever mellow.
3 years talking about nothing?
Nothing's ever mellow with Bill Belichick.
I think
he
wants everything to be mellow. Are you kidding? He wants everything out of the way.
I think you're both looking at it from the extremes. You're looking at it like it's the Pats fan, everyone's out to get us. You're looking at it like, oh, I'm the Pats hater, I'm happy to see it unraveling. I think you got to look at it in the middle. For someone who's as big a control freak as Bill Belichick is, for someone who's as big a control freak as Tom Brady is, the fact that Brady has allowed this third party into his life so willingly is interesting. And of course that's going to rub Belichick the wrong way, because it's the one thing that Belichick can't control. And now you're going to have Brady for 3, 4, 5 more years, and this is going to be more time dealing with this guy? Absolutely, I believe.
Wait, that reeks of just a made-up thing to me.
That's what
really
I wanted
does.
To ask.
But think about what you're insinuating. That two journalists are making up this story just to get the Patriots.
No. Okay, let me clarify. Made up is not the term. This probably isn't made up. They've probably met each other, Guerrero and Belichick, and Belichick probably doesn't like him being on the plane and being on the sidelines. But to blow this thing up like it's going to affect the team somehow, I think they'll...
But that's a quote that they got from somebody.
The three of them will sit in an office some Tuesday, and the whole thing will disappear. That's
disagree.
My opinion.
Disagree.
Let me ask you this. Does it surprise you that, and maybe I'm wrong on this, that Tom and Bill Belichick's relationship is not as strong as people... Actually, that's and the only reason I bring that up, I started thinking about Phil Jackson and his relationship with Michael and Scotty and Kobe and Shaq, were not of really friendly either. Is that the way you're supposed to handle star athletes? Or because if I was the coach, I'd carry Tom Brady on my shoulders everywhere he wanted to go.
Well, number one, remember that he said that this story does not question Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's relationship. Thomas Journeau even started that by saying, well, I don't know so much about Brady and Belichick. What I do know is that Guerrero and Belichick, there's some tension there. So this story never speculated. It was a guy from the Golf Channel, Ryan Burr, who put out a tweet and said Brady's closer to Kraft than he is Belichick, and everybody lumped this in together. Story didn't question that.
Right. No, but I just wonder, because you could tell, with the quotes, not from that one, but the way Tom, actually the one that we played from yesterday, when he did the morning show, you could tell the way he was talking that he's just not very close with Bill Belichick.
Guerrero saying,
you could just tell that they're not close like him. And who said that? It was Eric Dickerson who said that he was in Israel with Kraft, and that Tom Brady called Kraft, and they were talking like they were fraternity brothers from long lost time ago, and having the best time. And he goes, he doesn't do that with Belichick. That came from Eric Dickerson, I think.
Well, the tell all will tell all in 10 years, I guess. But I mean, getting back to number two, Belichick was confident he could win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. What else is he going to say?
Right, and that.
I mean, I think without Brady, we would have gone 4-12. I mean, what's he going to say? He has to say that.
So then, why is that part of the story getting attacked? 75% of the story was about the TB12 method and Brady's quest to play forever.
Yeah.
Why are we getting so bent out of shape then, and Belichick calling it fake news when that's not the real issue of the story? Belichick should be mad at his friends then, who are the ones that said, now they were unnamed, but they're his friends supposedly who are saying this stuff. I believe most of this story. The only thing I don't necessarily buy into is that he's going to stick around long enough for his kids to inherit the team in some way. Yeah. Because I don't think, unless he sticks around 10 years, his kids are going to have the resumes to be head coaches.
And as a Pats fan, again, number three, long enough to keep this thing going? Yahoo! Good! Let's keep it going. There's nothing of those three things that concerns me in the least.
Yeah, and, you know, just on the, what I said about the Belichick and Brady relationship, wouldn't you think it would be better, like I said? But then again, Phil didn't have a good relationship with his players. I mean, that's I guess that's the way you have to go ahead and treat players like that.
And can you look at the situation where they don't get along as he's 40 and he's not going to be around a lot longer, but they keep winning anyway? For me, it's just with the Pats, it's just, right. are they winning? I've got that it's on to Denver philosophy for some reason.
Brady, who's on the line?
It's Joe from Hinesburg.
Joe, you're on 101.3 ESPN. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, guys. Hey, you know, it's Dan Shaughnessy that said that Guerrero's a snake oil salesman. That all came right from Shaughnessy.
Really?
We had it on Champlain Valley game night here.
Yeah, no, Shaughnessy's the one. Shaughnessy does not like that dude at all.
Well, he doesn't like anyone. Who does he like?
That's a good point. But at least at least the guy's honest. He comes right out.
Yep.
It's not always good, but he does say, look, that's a snake oil salesman, and Belichick does not want him on the airplane.
All right, Joe, I appreciate the call. Do you guys think that Tom Brady would be duped into believing in a snake oil salesman, especially considering who his wife is? And both of them have, I don't want to say handlers, but like the sharpest businessmen around her and him.
Right.
I can assume that she's got the sharpest business people all around her. She's worth a lot of money. Yet they get duped by some guy like this? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, where does Shaughnessy get that impression? Has he sat down and talked with the two of them?
I'm just saying, if I told you where Warren Buffett was buying a stock,
right.
I want to buy that
stock.
Yes,
me too.
Okay, then. There you go.
Let's face it, Dan Shaughnessy has had a very, very nice career for decades and decades by having glass half empty. And that's everyone in Boston sports attitude. It certainly is mine, and that's what works down there.
Well, he said that Guerrero, he told me last week in Champlain Valley game night that he was a witch doctor. Here it is right here. Let's see. This was Dan Shaughnessy to me last week.
The Brady Belichick thing, I have no idea. I think that the Alex Guerrero presence is in the way. That's going to come out in that magazine piece, and I'm sure Bill hates having this guy around on his sideline, in his locker room, on the airplane, and he's not on the staff, and he's kind of he's a witch doctor. He's a fraud. So, that's going to create tension.
So that's two people saying that it's tension.
Yeah. Good old Dan.
Like I said, you think Tom Brady would put his whole reputation? Tom Brady's very calculated. His wife is very calculated. Somebody's getting duped here, right? So somebody's wrong.
I guarantee you, Tom Brady doesn't like hearing Dan Shaughnessy say that his good buddy and trainer and life coach is a. What do you call him?
A witch doctor. Yeah.
Well, Thomas Juneau told us that Brady is a believer. Breaking news, Roy Halladay confirmed dead. So that is tragic. Let's go to break. We'll come back.
All right. Roy Halladay passed away. We'll come back. More on that right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right. Break time is over. Back to the best sports talk in the Champlain Valley. It's The Huddle with Rich and Arnie. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. We do want to give you the breaking news. Roy Halladay, two-time Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, retired from baseball about 4 years ago, has died in a plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico right off Florida. He was 40 years old. The Pasco Sheriff County's Department confirmed a small engine plane aircraft piloted by Halladay was reported down in the Gulf of Mexico earlier on Tuesday afternoon. He recently received his pilot's license and tweeted photos last month of himself standing next to a new Icon A5 plane, which was the model of the aircraft that was recovered Tuesday in the Gulf. Eight-time All-Star, went 203-105, 3.38 ERA, and more about his stats and stuff like that. But I guess that's insignificant right now.
It is. And I was just talking about how unbelievable he was as a Toronto Blue Jay. And, I mean, you just... You know, it's situations like this, the first thing I looked at was the numbers, and it's not so much that the numbers really matter, but the first thing that occurs to me is how dominating that guy was and the amount of innings he gave to that team. He had 9 complete games in 5 different years. He had 8 and 7 in 2 other years. I mean, he was just a horse.
I mean, he does remind me of Clayton Kershaw before Kershaw, and they overlapped a little bit, of course, because Halladay pitched until 2013 right. and really at a high level up until like 2011, 2012. Yeah. But you talk about a guy who took the ball 200 innings plus every single year, went nine innings, efficient with his pitch count, could do everything, and did it at not a great velocity. I mean, he was 91 to 94 most of his career, used a ton of movement on his pitches. He was phenomenal, and they always say that the mark of how good a person or how big an impact somebody had comes out in when they die. And you're seeing it now on Twitter, entire droves of the MLB yeah. community coming out talking about, hey, I wanted to be Roy Halladay. I idolized Roy Halladay. Right, Roy Halladay. It shows you just how amazing he was.
And I know winning and losing isn't everything. The one-loss records aren't a big deal, and they even maybe weren't in his time, which was 98 till about 2013. But, I mean, to be 100, basically 100 games over 500 in that short of a career shows you just how dominant he was for several years.
Roy Halladay, of course, died in a plane crash today off the Gulf of Mexico, off Florida. He was 40 years old. Mm. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and friends of Roy Halladay. All right, but we do have to continue. A lot's going on. I know we want to get to the Yankees. And also, I want to ask you later on, Brady, if we hopefully we'll have time, about what what's-his-face, Irsay, said about Andrew yeah. Luck, that it was in his head mentally. And because that's what you deal with, that with being a pitcher. Because what do you do when you're mentally unable to play anymore? Or if that's even the problem. I don't even know. I want to get that later on. But first, let's get to the Yankees. What's going on?
Well, Brian Cashman came out and talked about why he got rid of Joe Girardi, or why he recommended that the Yankees get rid of Joe Girardi. He came out and said this yesterday.
I made that recommendation based on a few years now of some experiences that I was able to validate, whether it's directly or indirectly, about the connectivity and the communication level with the players. When I saw that wasn't happening, to the level I think that was necessary as we move forward, that's when the recommendation came by.
Can I read between the lines? We no longer want you to teach them how to play the game. We want you to be their buddy. So, I mean, that's how you read between the lines yeah. on that one, Ty Lue and all that stuff. So
isn't that
go.
Amazing? Just a few years ago, we were talking about how you can't be one of the guys in the clubhouse. Yeah. Oh, you've got to take charge.
Yeah, yeah.
But imagine hiring a drill sergeant now.
Oh, no.
Good luck with that.
Oh, no.
Is a fairly recent change, a fairly recent phenomenon. It seems like the last 5 or 6 years.
But now you're talking about just in baseball, because you see Tom Coughlin just got rehired for that reason in yep. Jacksonville. As far as baseball goes, the Yankees and the Red Sox did the same thing. They didn't. We're not saying that Girardi and Farrell are not good managers. They're saying they're not good people managers, and that's what this has become more of. It's no longer just about can you decide when to pinch hit, can you decide when to take the starting pitcher out. It's about how can you handle these relationships. And what this tells me, the Yankees have gotten significantly younger. Girardi has gotten older and older and older every year, obviously, and therefore there's a now generational disconnect between Girardi and the players.
And Girardi said, I mean, I was listening to WFAN on the way home last night after the show, and he was on for a good half an hour on the show, and he just says, look, I wanted to come back. He was very honest about it. I honestly didn't think he wanted to come back to me. He just looked exhausted. I guess that's what happens when you play 180 games in 190 days or whatever, but I just didn't think he was going to come back. Turns out he had told his family he very much wanted to come back, but that was not to be.
Why would there be disconnect? What, you do not respect anything anybody over 50 has ever done in their careers? Would you have a disrespect or disconnect if your pilot was over 50 years old? No, you'd be not. If your doctor was over 50 years old and he was operating, or would you want some kid that was 25 years old, you know?
No, I think, well, you respect the life experience and the baseball experience that they've had. The message becomes kind of lost when you are clenched fist all the time, wound up, pressure's on you, and then you force that on your young players, and your young players can't really respond to that all that well.
Not everybody over 50 is like that.
But Girardi is like that.
He is. Sure.
But Girardi is
like
that way.
He is like that. But you know what?
Pete Carroll, this is a good example.
Right.
Pete Carroll.
He's an old guy, 67 years old. Yeah.
He's
Pete Carroll is a fun-loving 67-year-old that I would imagine 24-year-olds like playing for.
It catches grief for that, by the way.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that. I think, and maybe it's because I'm a quote millennial, and maybe it's because that's how
right.
I think. But
right.
I think Pete Carroll would be an old guy that's fun to play for. I think I do not believe Joe Girardi deserved to lose his job. They were too productive for him to lose his job. But if you're asking me, is that a guy I'd want to play for? Not necessarily.
Why disconnect after 10 years, or was it a disconnect earlier and then they finally got rid of him? I guess Bobby Knight doesn't work in this type of thing.
The team finally got younger. That was the difference. When Joe Girardi was 47 and the whole team was 37, they were wound as tightly as he was. Now the whole team is 26 and he's 50 and it's different.
Right, so who do they go after? I mean, Cora's gone. I mean, you can't have A.J. Hinch. You probably can't have Dave Roberts. I mean, those are the kind of people we're talking about, the former players, one of the guys, young-ish, analytically driven, you know, who understands those parts of the nuances of the game. I mean, what in the world do the Yankees go after now?
It just sounds like you don't really care what somebody does on the field anymore. It's if they can be one of the guys, and I guess it doesn't matter because – I mean, Mike Sosa was a pretty good manager, and you know, he was an okay. I guess he was better than okay, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was one of the guys in the beginning, but he was a bit of a drill sergeant too.
Yeah,
now
that's
all he is.
Yeah. Well, the days of Jim Leland and all that stuff. Yeah, that's not going to cut it. But who's coming up next, Brady?
Tom Karen of Nesson. We'll talk to him about Roy Halladay, Alex Cora, and more.
And also, big news. Well, I'm going to be a surprise on that, Rich. Remember, big news about
what?
Oh, we'll tell you when we get back. Coming up next.
Okay, that was a long enough break. We're back to the huddle with Rich and Arnie right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, a busy Tuesday. Glad everybody could join us. We go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, as he does every week, our Red Sox insider from Nesson, it's Tom Karen. How you doing, TC?
Good. How are we doing, guys?
Well, we've been talking about this all day. I don't know if you heard about this. We've been spending like 45 minutes on it, about the big upset in soccer in Massachusetts. In the tell us about. Come on, TC. Tell us about that.
The greatest upset since the 1980 U.S. Olympic team. All right.
Well, and some kid named Karen scored the winning goal.
The game winner in the second half. Yeah, no, my son's high school soccer team was squeaked into the playoffs late in the second round yesterday. Played the undefeated, untied number one team in the state that had beaten us 4-0 in the final game a week ago.
Wow.
Stunning upset. 3-1. Robbie with the game winner. They lived to fight another day.
Now, is it true it's because of your motivational speech before the game?
You know what? It's funny. I text him usually a little motivational thought.
Yeah.
And yesterday was such, we were such underdogs yesterday. All I texted him the link to the Herb Brooks speech in Miracle. I said, just watch this. Nothing I can say. Just watch this.
So is he going to be an insufferable teenager for the next month?
Well, it all depends what happens tomorrow. Now, if you think great, the semifinals are tomorrow. There's not much time to glow.
TC, let's go from one extreme high to the extreme low. The breaking news on Roy Halladay, somebody who you saw pitch a bunch when he was a member of the Blue Jays, one of the best to ever do it, dead at the age of 40. Just what's your initial reaction when you hear that?
Oh, your stomach turns. This guy, I used to love watching him pitch because he competed every time. He wanted to go the distance. You know, he reminded me of Chris Sale just in his approach. You know, I remember watching a game where I think it was against the Red Sox, and I think it was in Toronto when he was pitching in Toronto, and the manager came out with two outs in the ninth inning. A guy got on to take the ball, and he glared at him, and that manager turned around and went back to the dugout. You know, and there aren't many pitchers who can do that at that point of the game. Just such a sad, sad story, and so disheartening to see that happen because this guy, to me, was amongst the handful of pitchers I used to love watch pitch even against the Red Sox.
All right, well, TC, we move on. Alex Cora introduced as the new manager of the Red Sox. What did you think of the introductory press conference, him saying hello to everybody?
Yeah, it was good. I thought he said all the right things. I like some of the terminology he uses, hunting for pitches to do damage against. I talked to him individually about the lack of power with his team last year, and doesn't need a new philosophy, and he said it's really more about, attacking pitchers early in the count. You know, he thought this team, and I would agree with him, had a tendency to just try to work the count a little too much, missing the opportunities that they had early in the count with pitches that they could do something with. So I like that approach. I love what he said about Boston, that, you know, this is a place that the passion's there every day, and you got to learn to appreciate that, not fight it, because that's the first order of business here, is to get David Price to relax, to get the young players to relax, to let them all stop worrying about the media, worrying about the fans, worrying about social media, and just get them ready to play baseball next year. So I think he's off to a good start.
Young guy, former player, even a former Red Sox player. I mean, is this going to be sort of a warm and cuddly atmosphere now for the players? Is there any concern about that with him?
Well, it is interesting that, you know, he was very upfront saying, you know, some people say it's negative to be a player's manager, to be too close to the players. And you know, he said, I look at that as a positive. And, you know, he comes from the Astros where A.J. Hinch was that kind of manager. You know, this is a guy who built very close relationships with the players. And I will say, you know, John Farrell, you know, I thought was a good manager. I thought did a good job. I thought it was time for a new voice in that clubhouse. And the difference between John Farrell and what I felt talking to and listening to Alex Cora yesterday was John Farrell is kind of the ultimate father figure. You know, he's got that look in his eyes, and you go up to your room, young man.
Yeah.
And Alex Cora is more like a big brother, you know, and with a young team, that might not be a bad thing. You know, this guy might be connecting with these guys in a way they haven't had yet. So maybe that'll help.
Tom Caron of Nesson with us on The Huddle, as he is every Tuesday at 4:35. What do you think of the staff around Cora? I think the staff's really important around a first-time manager. I really like what they've done to this point. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I like Ron Renneke a lot. The people I know who were close to him in Milwaukee really liked him as a manager. They say he's a really good communicator, and I think that's such an important role for Cora because, you know, as we all know, he has zero experience as a big league manager. So that bench coach, it's kind of got to be the guy who can once in a while grab him and say, hey, no, wait, think of this. Or, hey, we got a situation going on in that clubhouse. You've got to go deal with it. Or, hey, you got to go talk to this guy. And I think that Renneke's a really good choice for that to be able to handle that role. So I thought he did a good job there. And I think that's really the most important. You know, generally, you're talking about a pitching coach and a hitting coach being the most important. I think in this case, Renneke, who's got nearly 30 years of experience, is the most important guy on that staff. The rest of the group, you know, Tom Goodwin is good and has some managing experience, which I think is good. I love Carlos Fables. I knew him a little bit when he was with the Portland Sea Dogs, and he's really well respected. Keeping Daniel Lavangi was really important. I think it was important for him to build his own staff because if you're doing this to get a new voice, you need a completely new voice. You don't need the same guys interpreting his message. So I think he's off to a good start. Pitching coach is important. You know what I mean? You got to see what they're going to do here. Some good names are already off the board. But by and large, I like what they've done.
Well, I was going to ask you about that pitching coach because I do think when you have Cora, who's a former infielder, and a lot of his staff, former position players, do we know who they're thinking about talking to, promoting from within, guys outside? Do we have any idea?
I don't, you know what I mean? And kicking it around yesterday, it sounded like they were fairly close, but I really couldn't get a feel for where they're going to end up with that search. I just, you know, there's nobody really still around who, you know, internally, at least not that I can think of, that is going to end up being the pitching coach here. And he went from a staff that had, you know, a manager as a pitching, a former pitching coach, rather, as a manager, as well as Carl Willis. And so that's going to be a big change. And, you know, the guy who comes in day one, you got to send him down to Nashville and have him take David Price out to dinner and whisper sweet nothings into his ears. Because this whole thing begins with an attitude readjustment for David Price. That's got to happen. It's got to happen soon. And I think the pitching coach is going to be right in the middle of that conversation.
All right, TC, after that, what's next? I mean, MLB trade rumors had the Red Sox getting like three of the top 50 free agents. Do we look outside of the box? Maybe there's a major trade with Jackie Bradley. I don't know. What's the next big thing for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think it starts on the free agent market. I think they'd love to get a J.D. Martinez if somebody's going to come in here and club home runs. I thought it was huge and hugely important that yesterday Dave Dombrowski said they will not try to stay under the luxury tax this year. They did it last year so they could reset that tax. Now they're going to go ahead and spend money like they used to. It's their money, not ours, so let's go. you know, so I think it begins by seeing what you can do with the free agent market. There's some good names out there. You know, I think Martinez is at the top of my list. Moustakas is right there. Hosmer's right there. Carlos Santana, Jay Bruce a little bit further back. You know, there's guys you could get without having to give up, you know, your current players. And then you mentioned Bradley. You know, if you brought in J.D. Martinez, you brought in somebody who could play outfield, you put him in the corner, you move Benintendi to the middle, now you've got a tremendous trade asset in Jackie Bradley Jr. I love his defense. His hitting's up and down. I'm not saying you need to get rid of him, but if you wanted to go maybe help the pitching side a little bit, or maybe go get a first baseman, you could do that through the trade market. So, I think it all begins with the free agent market. DeBrusky told me yesterday, he said, I don't know if we will be active, but we're going to be active in calling people. He goes, we're going to be kicking tires everywhere. So when he says that, usually Dombrowski comes up with some pretty creative stuff.
And you mentioned Benintendi. Obviously, he's up for Rookie of the Year and has absolutely no shot. I mean, if this is a non-Aaron Judge year, could he have won that?
Yeah. You know, I think when you look at his whole season, you know, he had that dip in the middle. I think the fact that he bounced back the way he did, you know, really means this was a very good rookie season for him. But, you know, Jack, he's got no chance. I mean, this is a generational rookie that you saw in Aaron Judge, who's got to, you know, he might win the MVP. I don't think he should. I'm an Altuve guy, but you know, he's got no chance against Judge. But you got to be happy with his rookie season when it's all said and done, because he made that adjustment late in the season and got his game back together.
As for the Bruins, I mean, the roller coaster continues,
yeah.
But you know what? You know what I liked last night? They got the lead. They almost blew it yet again. But look who scored the goals last night. Guys like DeBrusk and Vetrano finally scored. And guys like that. I mean, and Schaller with the empty netter at the end. I mean, that's what has to happen if this Bruins team's going to have a great year.
Well, and the Vetrano goal to me, more than anything, is what you get excited about last night. I mean, that's, you know, this guy's game is scoring goals. And if he's not scoring goals, you got to start wondering where he fits in. So, you know, they had six rookies in that lineup last night. More injuries, Marchand out last night. But when you know, I like the way DeBrusk has played all year. Vetrano, you know, like I said, him pitching in is huge. And even when, you know, we're talking about this time and time again, they build a lead and then you hold on for dear life as you watch the other guys come back. But they hold on and get the win. And, you know, this becomes a tough schedule. A lot of games coming up, really good teams that they're going to be playing. And, you know, they talk about it every year, right? It's where you stand after Thanksgiving, you know, the beginning of December. If you're in the top 10, your chance of making the playoffs are dramatically better, dramatically increased. So, you kind of got to just survive these next few weeks. It's a busy schedule with good opponents, and you just don't want to fall off the pack. So every 2 points is huge.
All right, TC, we're expecting two, right? Two goals from your son, two from your son tomorrow.
No pressure. Listen, team game. It's a team game, all right? You know, we survive in advance, right? That's what it's all about.
I love it. TC, always a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Best of luck to your son in his game, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you. I'm sure the great folks of Northern Vermont are thrilled with all the
stuff. All right, take care. Tom Karen, everybody, TC of Ness. That's exciting. That's good. You're proud, Dad, you know?
And what he isn't telling you is it was splattered all over his Facebook page.
Oh, I'm sure.
Every second of that game. It's not like he doesn't want us to know that Robbie scored the winning goal.
I love it. That is awesome. All right, good to hear from Tom Karen. We're going to come back gone but not forgotten as we wrap up our number one right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up tomorrow, Mike.
It's Tuesday, which means it's time for Gone But Not Forgotten. Brought to you by Elmwood Minya Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington.
All right, Gone But Not Forgotten. Thanks to our friends over at Elmwood Minya Funeral and Cremation Center in South Burlington. I'll start things off. Butch Cassidy. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
What do you mean? What's... He's gone?
Gone. 1908. He's been gone for a while.
I thought so.
Died in 1908, Butch Cassidy. Steve McQueen, yeah. Who a lot of, I was going to say older ladies, used to love this guy.
Mother.
A good-looking guy, huh?
Redford, Newman, and McQueen were big in my house.
Yeah, what was the big movie he was in? The war movie where they tried to escape. Oh, the Great Escape. There you go. That was it. The Great Escape.
That Great Escape thing.
Yeah, that Great Escape thing. So he passed away. Joe Frazier, at the age of 67, passed away back in 2011. And Arnold Rothstein, the only reason I bring him up, passed away in 1928 at the age of 46 years old. He was a mobster. I believe he was gunned down. He was the one that fixed the 1919 World Series.
Wow.
So there you go. Arnold Rothstein passing away in 1928. What do you got, Rich?
For me, thanks. Or I should say gone but not forgotten. The new Nike tearaway jerseys. I love this because this is like massive corporate America just falling on their faces in front of everybody. $1 billion 8-year deal with the NBA. LeBron, the number one most important, most viewed human being on this planet when it comes to basketball, has his jersey ripped on opening night, national TV. And then Ben Simmons had his completely torn to shreds right off of his back. And they're saying everything they need to say, but let's just say those shirts are gone, but not forgotten.
I love it.
My gone, but not forgotten is LeVar Ball perhaps getting mad about Lonzo Ball's playing time. Well, now that he's had his son arrested for shoplifting, maybe he can focus on parenting rather than coaching.
I have $5 that says that it was not, what is it?
LiAngelo.
LiAngelo's fault. It's a big misunderstanding, and his son is getting prosecuted for no reason whatsoever.
Did you tell me this happened in China?
Yes, happened in China.
That makes it even stupider.
Yeah.
Talk about a gamble.
Yeah, stupider? Yeah.
Now, isn't that a word?
More stupid?
Dumber would be probably a better word there. Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center in South Burlington, a funeral home that provides you with the comfort of home. Elmwood Meunier, they can personalize the service for your loved ones. They could even have for your entire family, even for your pets. So when our Golden passed away, I never would have thought to contact a funeral home for pet cremation, but they do it over at Elmwood Meunier. It's always good to have options, and our friends over at Elmwood Meunier have been serving families for many generations. They're here for you and your family 24/7, thanks to Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center in South Burlington. Hour one in the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. When we get back, Zach Cox, our Patriot insider from Nesson, will stop on by. So we have lots to get to right here on 101.3 ESPN. All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. A super busy Tuesday, guys. Let's get right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, as he does every week from Nesson, it's our Patriot Insider, it's Zach Cox. How you doing, Zach?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
Good. Well, did you take some time off, go to Hawaii? What did you do with yourself? I mean, it was a bye week. Yeah, had so much free time, I am assuming.
Yeah, no Hawaii, unfortunately, but it was nice to have a nice weekend away from Gillette Stadium, kind of recharge the batteries a little bit. Now I'm ready to get back into it.
Well, a guy who's come back from the bye week, already agitated, appears to be Bill Belichick. He called the ESPN the magazine story that came out last week fake news. What did you make of Belichick's comments?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was a little bit surprising that he even addressed it at all. Usually, he basically just kind of pretends that he hasn't seen any kind of news reports like this, but I guess for his reaction, it's not a huge surprise considering it was all kind of anonymous sources. I said it was friends of Belichick. I think that was the anonymous source quoted in there. So it's kind of I didn't really expect him to shed too much light on that. And who knows how truthful that whole story was, I guess. It sounded like there was a decent amount of kind of speculation in there. So it's kind of tough to judge. But it was an interesting story. I mean, a lot of it was stuff we've already heard before about Tom Brady's whole TB12 method or whatever. But the bits about Belichick in there were definitely interesting.
Zach, I mean, you're around the guys pretty frequently, obviously. How often is a guy like Alex Guerrero around the team? And what exactly does he do?
To be honest, I don't think I've ever seen him in the Patriots locker room or around the team. He has been on the sideline a couple of times, but every time Bill Belichick is asked about him, he's makes a point to say that Guerrero is not employed by the team. He's not a team employee. It sounds like most of the work he does is at the TB12 facility over which is in Patriot Place, but it's not actually a part of the stadium. And Belichick seems like he kind of treats this as just a he compared it yesterday to if a player had his own doctor, his own chiropractor, or whatever, just an additional person outside of the organization. But definitely, I mean, it's not surprising that there could be some friction there. I mean, in essence, it's a guy kind of telling the team trainers how to do their job. And I can see how some people might take a little bit of offense to that. Again, I don't have any insider knowledge of anybody that actually is kind of disgruntled with Guerrero, but it wouldn't be the biggest surprise if that was the case.
Zach Cox, our Patriot insider from Nesson, joining us right here in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Zach, just on a side note, Bill Belichick, is he more likely to retire a year before Brady to say, hey, he can't do it without me, more likely to retire with Brady, or more likely to retire a year after Brady to say, hey, I can do it without him? What do you think?
If I had to choose between those three, I think it would be the third. There was a report that came out after the Garoppolo trade all went down. I think it might have been in that same ESPN story that Belichick did want to. One of the reasons why he didn't want to trade Jimmy Garoppolo was that he wanted to prove that he could win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady, because obviously they've been pretty much linked for Belichick's entire Patriots tenure here. It's not, that wouldn't be completely surprising. I mean, Belichick's a competitive dude, as you have to be as successful as he's been. And I don't know when Bill Belichick's going to retire. It's a really hard question to answer, because he said in the past in that America's Game documentary he did 5 or 6 years ago that he doesn't want to be Marv Levy and coach into his 70s, but he's getting pretty close to his 70s right now, and he still seems to be going strong. So I don't know. I could see Bill Belichick retiring in 2 years, or I could see him coaching another 10 years. I just thought as easily. It's really hard to get a read on the guy.
Zach, I'll get you one more question on that piece, and then we'll move to this year's team and this week's upcoming game against Denver. One of the things that surprised me in the piece was that Belichick wanted to hang around long enough, supposedly, to establish a, quote, dynastic succession in which his kids might take over the team. Now, aren't his kids lower-level position coaches at this point? Even if he retired in 3-4 years, would they have the resume built up to be a head coach? Is that something that he's talked about?
Yeah, no, I've never heard anything about that until reading that piece, and it's a little bit of a strange. I don't know. I can see how he would want to be around coaching with his kids for until they get to a point where they are kind of established coaches, where they can I guess go elsewhere or do whatever they want to. They've kind of got the clout to be legitimate NFL coaches. I don't think it's a situation where he wants to leave and then have Brian be the offensive coordinator and Steve be the defensive coordinator or something like that. I mean, Steve has risen up the ranks a little bit since he came in. He was a coaching assistant when he started 4 or 5 years ago. Then he was moved up to safeties coach this past year. But Brian is still pretty new. I mean, he's still a low level coaching assistant. So you would think that it would have to take a while for either of them to get it up to coordinator status or anything like that. And I don't know. I don't know how much stock I put in that part of the story, because yeah, it's not really completely. I don't know. I don't see it as being too realistic that they could both be kind of coaching fixtures for years to come. I guess it's a possibility, but that was. I don't know how much I put into that.
Zach, my timeline might be off by a week here, but Stephon Gilmore is part of the worst defense in the league. He gets hurt. By the time he comes back, what are they giving up, 12 a game over the last 3 or 4 weeks? I mean, is everyone real excited to have him back this Sunday?
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting thing to watch, because I think people do forget that Stephon Gilmore did have his best game of the season in the last game that he played in Week 5 against Tampa Bay, when he pretty much locked down Mike Evans that entire game. But then he got hurt in that game, and then that was really the first game where the Patriots defense looked passable, and then over the following 3 weeks it continued to improve and improve with Jonathan Batamosi being in there, Malcolm Butler playing pretty well, Jonathan Jones playing pretty well, all that stuff. But I mean, I do think that you'll probably see Stephon Gilmore back in his starting role whenever he's good enough to play. He said yesterday that he should play this weekend, so we should see him out there in Denver, and I think that's probably the right call. I mean, I think with how much money they're paying this guy and the fact that he did seem to improve in his last game, I think it would be a good idea to kind of give him another chance, not give up on him already. But he's going to have a very short leash, especially with how Jonathan Batabosi's played in his absence. I mean, Patriots have proven that they can win without Stephon Gilmore. I'm sure they're hoping that the defense will get even better when Stephon Gilmore's back and maybe he's playing at his actual potential. But, yeah, they've definitely proven they can do it without him. So he's not going to have much leeway in there.
Now, they might have to do it without Chris Hogan. What's the latest on his shoulder? What's going on there?
Yeah, last I heard, he was a sprained AC joint, I think, was the report. Yep. They say he was going to be out a couple weeks. Last I saw him, he was still wearing a sling around in the locker room. But, yeah, I would kind of doubt that he'll be out there this weekend. It seems like he'll miss at least one game, which could open up some opportunities for a guy like Philip Dorsett, who we really haven't seen that much of this season. Maybe a guy like Dwayne Allen, who's still looking for his first catch. So this Patriots team, it's deep enough that they have the players to replace Chris Hogan in there. But he's been a very productive guy for them this season. So if luckily for them, he's probably not going to miss significant time, which would have been a real problem for this team.
Zach Cox, our Pats insider at Nesson, joins us every Tuesday, 5 p.m. right here on 101.3 ESPN. This team has struggled with Tom Brady under center in Denver over Brady's career. And even though Denver doesn't look so good right now, how does the team overcome the mile-high bugaboos this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think they overcame the mile-high bugaboos last season because the whole storyline going into that game last December, I think it was week 15 or 14, that they lost three in a row up there. I think it was six of their previous seven. Tom Brady's always had a hard time winning in Denver. They dispatched him pretty easily last year because Denver's offense was awful last year, and it's still pretty awful right now. Their defense is. Defense is legit, but when you're playing against a team that has Brock Osweiler as its quarterback, it's really, I don't know, I don't think this is going to be as big of a test as some of those Broncos teams were a couple years ago. But Mile High is a tough place to play. It's going to be a night game, prime time, probably going to be pretty cold up there. So the elements will definitely play a factor in this, but I don't know. I'm leaning pretty heavily toward the Patriots in this game.
Not to mention how hard it is to breathe, as I find out every time I go skiing out there. What do you think the NFL thinks about the Patriots' decision to spend as much time as humanly possible after Sunday night's game in Denver and not promoting the cause south of the border?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a smart move for them. They usually do this maybe not once a season, but at least once every couple of years. They did it in San Diego a couple of years ago, where if they have two West Coast games or two games in a different time zone, they'll just stay out for a week. I think they like the team bonding aspect of it, and I think they definitely like the fact that they need to get used to that elevation in Mexico, because, I mean, as high as Mile High as I think the Stadio Azteca down there in Mexico City is 2,000 feet higher, so that's going to be an even tougher test with the elevation and the lack of oxygen and all that stuff up there. And I think, I'm not sure their exact schedule for Mexico, but I think they're not staying there for a particularly long time. I think they're only going to be there for a couple days. So they're going to do most of their training out in Colorado Springs to kind of get used to the conditions as best they can while still staying on American soil.
Zach Cox, our Patriot insider, joining us right here at 101.3 ESPN. Zach, Robert Kraft, what's going on with the collusion case with Colin Kaepernick? I mean, how serious is that? Is there something to worry about here if you're one of the NFL owners?
I have no idea, actually. This is kind of a strange situation where the fact that Robert Kraft is kind of wrapped into this, because obviously he is a very powerful owner, but you wouldn't think that the Patriots are a team that would really have interest in Colin Kaepernick anyway. I mean, obviously they did need a backup quarterback, but overall there are teams with a lot more pressing QB needs that you could say might have benefited from possibly signing Colin Kaepernick.
All right. Well, Zach, look, always appreciated, my friend. Good job. Always like to hear the insight back at it. So no time off for you, and we'll catch up with you next week, Zach.
All right.
I just started breaking up there at the end there. Zach
Cox.
Good timing. Zach Cox, our Patriot insider from Nesson. So it's always good to have him stop on by. And it seemed like forever since the Patriots have played, has it not, or what? It just goes to show you how bad the AFC, I brought this up earlier, on Monday, I mean. With Pittsburgh not playing and the Patriots not playing, I mean, it was garbage. Yeah. It was really garbage in the AFC. It's like the Eastern Conference in the NBA.
So you don't buy into Kansas City or Jacksonville or any of those teams?
Ever since I started calling them my Kansas City Chiefs, they went 1-3. Nationally, people are just killing me. People in Kansas City don't want me anywhere near their team.
No, you're just like,
they're like, get off the bandwagon,
right,
you.
Don't cheer for my team.
They don't, you don't want to hear what they call me. Brady, you said somebody called at the break and, one told us that Holiday died. We knew that one, but what did he say about my basketball game?
He said you were the worst player on the court.
That's a lie.
Now,
from yesterday, you're talking about from yesterday?
He just said you're the worst player on the court.
Okay, now, can I confirm you said there was about 100 players last
night? No, we had
about
40. About 40 to 50.
40 is a little different.
Well, there was
that's
10,
way too many for one gym.
Yeah, there's one gym, 10 playing, and about 30 to 40 waiting.
So for you to be the worst player out of 40,
yeah,
I mean, that's setting the bar really low.
I know I could probably beat that guy, whoever did that, picks up the phone and you're the worst and hangs up.
Maybe it was Big Dave.
Big Dave never comes. The guy, he always threatens to come. The one that says I dropped 100 on UVM back in the 1800s never comes to the game. Never comes to the game at all.
You know, can I get on something else
quick? Yeah, go ahead.
Can I rant for like 30 seconds?
Yeah.
And Gone But Not Forgotten, I really wanted to do this one, but I passed it up for a chance to take a shot at LeVar Ball. But now I got a new Gone But Not Forgotten. Gone But Not Forgotten, the 140 characters on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like we're all going to get 280 characters. I don't want that. You know what Twitter is going to become then? It's going to become Facebook. A bunch of stuff that I don't want to see from a bunch of people who I don't want to see it from.
I like it. And, you know,
you don't type anyways.
I know that. So I just keep it, you know, pretty much right around 140, 150. But now I can go over without feeling threatened.
It doesn't. It takes away the creativity necessary.
By the way, since you mentioned Ball, who is Jamin South Burlington mad at? He says, I hate the Balls, but that was a low blow. He's still a kid. His dad sucks, but he's still a kid, and he's innocent until proven guilty.
A low blow? What? He went to China and shoplifted?
Yeah.
How is that a good thing?
I think it was something that you said.
I think it was probably, I don't know, was it me? Because I said, Gone But Not Forgotten to LeVar Ball worrying about Lonzo's playing time.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. Okay, so I didn't know what he was all bent out of shape.
It wouldn't be a show without us infuriating at least a few people.
Well, James loves us. It's okay.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb, though, to shoplift in China.
In China? I mean, think about the consequences. You do that in Sacramento. But China.
Do they cut off your hands?
I don't know, but talk about asking for trouble.
Can you imagine if they saw it? Well, it's not like that. They're... You know,
but he can afford to go to China, but he shoplifts while he's over there.
It's with basketball, isn't it?
Would have to be. The season starts this week.
Yeah, it has something to do with basketball. There you go.
I'm pretty sure he's not just leaving the UCLA team with multiple other players in the week of the opening week.
But his dad said it was okay.
I should say this. There was a couple of other players that were also arrested with him.
Two.
No? Okay, so I don't want people to think that we're just picking on him.
No, three players.
Okay, so which is... dumb all the way around when you're getting a full ride at UCLA. So, I mean, absolutely ludicrous to do something like that. All right, tell everybody about the new contest we're doing and about our new qualifier.
We're doing the new contest called Choose Your All-Star Game. That's right. When you hear this, the Price is Right sound, that is your cue to call.
I was wondering why I didn't recognize that.
You're going to hear that four times a day, three times prior to the show, one time here in the huddle. And here's what we're doing for you, a chance to choose your All-Star game. You can win, you and a guest, tickets, airfare, hotel, to the All-Star game of your choice, the Pro Bowl, Major League Baseball, NHL, the NBA. We're doing this contest for the next 3 weeks. We're getting our fourth qualifier for the day. We'll do it again, all again tomorrow.
NBA All-Star Games in L.A.
NBA All-Star Game is in L.A., so let's do it now. Let's take caller number 6.
Okay.
802-655-6672.
All right, what are you waiting for? Caller 6, you qualify to pick any of the All-Star Games you want to go to. You'll be able to take a friend. So we've got everything covered. You'll get airfare and hotel and all that good stuff.
And if you don't have any friends, we're here to help
you. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why hopefully somebody who wins has no friends whatsoever. I'm hoping it's Jason that way. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. They're calling it now.
This is why people don't like me.
This is why people don't like me. 802-655-6672. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3.
Mike and Mike when you drive in and the huddle when you drive home.
Yes, I'm free.
Sports Talk lives right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It's a busy Tuesday. I got a hockey game tonight. You should come to the hockey game, Brady. You got nothing better to do. No, of course.
Playing basketball tonight.
He's playing basketball, but he doesn't invite me. Notice that, Rich.
You had a hockey game.
Notice what's going on, Rich. He noted when
he's avoiding your greatness.
He's avoiding my greatness. Yeah. Exactly.
No, I just exactly. I wanted real ballers.
Wow, you're so mean for crying out loud. My team is starting to suck too. I'm going to give them. I'm going to start yelling at them. I'm the only one scoring goals. Rich.
Right.
I'm the only one getting goals in there.
I'll be snoring at 7:30. By the way.
once I get done playing hockey, I'll be snoring. That's for sure. Brady, I wanted to ask you real quick before we get back into Alex Cora and we talk about the new varsity sport out there. Give me your thoughts on Andrew Luck being told that he isn't injured, that it's all in his head and it's mental, because that's something you hear for starting pitchers, right? Really no other position you hear say that.
I think you can have mental I disagree with that. I think you can have mental limitations no matter what it is. I think it all depends on how you got injured. I'm surprised to hear that this injury they think is in his head, because this is an injury. Like, I can see a receiver not wanting to go across the middle again because they got injured going across the middle. I can see a pitcher having trouble getting on the mound because they were hit by a line drive, or a batter not wanting to get in the box. Those are the things, those traumatic experiences that I associate with being in their head.
He wasn't even traumatic, though. It was just
right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm surprised to hear his owner say, oh, this is in his head, because I only ever associate, quote, being in your head with injuries that are traumatic. I can anticipate Gordon Hayward not wanting to go up for an alley-oop for a little while when he comes back, because in your mind, that experience triggers a bad memory.
Well, let's face it, Andrew Luck took as much a beating over his first couple of years in the league as a quarterback can have, though. I mean, it's not like it was easy for him. You know, he didn't have a free pass.
No, but I mean, just the fact that the owner is saying, yeah, get your ass back right out there.
That's fine if they're going to talk behind closed doors. Don't go to the media with that.
Well, and Lewis Riddick was on, I want to say it was Mike and Mike. It might have been Russillo today. It was Russillo. He said, don't go talking about somebody else's body as if it's your body. And I think he's right about that. Now, you have no way of saying that it's in Andrew Luck's head, because you do not have Andrew Luck's body.
Wait a minute now. The doctor's probably telling him, hey, he's cleared and he's fine. So anything that he's not doing is because of him, because I have cleared him medically. Is that a possibility or no? Because otherwise, why would Ursula get something like that?
But he hasn't been cleared medically, which is why he's out for the season.
Well, it's mental. That's why they haven't cleared him. Maybe they said, you know what, he should be back out there, but he can't do stuff, but he should be, because it's been enough time. You know, did you know that Jay Cutler had the same operation?
But that's different. I'm going to talk, and Cam Newton had a surgery as well. I'm going to talk with Stefania Bell tomorrow in Champlain Valley Game Night and try to get all these answers down about injuries in the shoulder and all that. But you can't say that this guy's going to recover. Adrian Peterson recovered from an ACL in 10 months. Other people take a year. This guy comes back from Tommy John in 12 months. That guy takes 18 months.
Well, we do question people's toughness.
Yeah, but I mean, can a medical doctor look at Andrew Luck and say, it's all in his head, so therefore he's going to pass that along to the front office?
You can't say it's been 10 months. He's got to be back out there. There's nothing more I could do. I'm not going to reoperate. I'm not going to open him back up. He's got to be back out there.
Well, I can't imagine. Andrew Luck doesn't seem like a candidate to wimp out in a situation does it?
No.
It seems to me he would be begging to get back into
the action. Yeah, he's not somebody who wants to wimp out. Look at he played with a ruptured spleen last year, not mistaken.
As he got sacked eight
times. That's pretty tough to do.
I
don't know what the story is. I don't know what to make of it. Is it mental? Does he still have an injury? Is it only like 90%? Is he being like Derrick Rose, where if he can't slam dunk off the left foot, he wasn't going to come back? So if he can't to throw a ball 80 yards or whatever the hell, he's not coming back?
Or
I don't know.
Is this possibly a third party saying, we
don't come back, we
this
stink
year,
right?
Let's keep our franchise intact by not, you know, killing this guy?
Yeah. Because the only thing he could say is, I'm not ready, and they're saying it's mental because he doesn't want to say what the real reason is, that they stink. Brady, let's get a little bit more about Cora and maybe talking to David Price.
Yeah, Alex Cora talked about David Price. He said he'd had a conversation with Price already, and then he says, for me, it's unfair to talk about what happened last year. It's in the past. I'm here to move forward, Cora said. This guy is very important for me. Whatever I can do to help him out, I'm going to be there for him. At the same time, whatever I can do for him to be successful, I have to be there for him. This whole clubhouse thing will be fine. You guys know how I dealt with Manny Ramirez with all his situations in Boston. We tried to bring this thing together. We're going to be fine.
Why are we handling David Price with kid gloves? I mean, why are we acting like it's something that we've brought on him and this started a whole war? What are we afraid of this
how
guy
is it
for?
Kid gloves when the Houston bench coach doesn't want to talk about David Price of the Red Sox and what happened last year? I mean, I wouldn't really want to say anything to media about last year
minute,
on a different team either.
Brady, if I was correct, you said one of the first things he did was talk to David Price, right?
He talked to David Price,
right.
Yes.
Why are you talking to David? There's
he's
no other
probably talked to everybody.
No,
don't you think?
No, I don't think he's talked to
He said he's going to visit some of these people. Yes, he is going to call everybody.
Oh, he's going to call, but I thought you said that he started with David Price.
He's called Pedroia. He's talked to Price.
The two problems.
Have to imagine he's talked to Betts and Benintendi as well.
Well, that's my point. I think he's starting with the two problems. I do think there's a problem. I don't know why we're, you know, saying, oh, we've got to start with Price. Don't worry about him. You know, he's got to conform to us, not us conform to him. It don't work that way.
I just think that's overthinking the situation with Price. Yeah. I think I love the fact that
after
he went to
after what he did last year?
No, but I mean, Brady just said it. Where does he go first? To the two, quote, problem children in the organization. Well, yeah, I think that's a good sign.
It's not only, though, that they were problems last year. It's that they're still of vital importance this year. Because of the money and the duration of their contracts, why not do everything you can to get them right so they can be of use to you? You're the one who keeps saying, oh, with Pedroia, you've got an albatross around your neck in his contract. And I have said that I think he's on the decline, and I think he was a problem last year as well. But you're stuck with him. He's a 10-5 guy. He's got full no-trade power. He can stay there for as long as he wants. So if he's going to be there, you better try to make him useful. Same thing with Price, because you get 5 more years to deal with him his attitude.
That's why you got the young manager, so he can suck up to all these young players.
I think Price is a guy that you have to get into his head immediately. You absolutely have to get him, and whether that's fair or not, he obviously making a gazillion dollars, he should come out there and do whatever Boston tells him to do. But at the same time, that's a guy you've got to get into the head of right out of the gate, and I love the fact that he went right after David Price.
That's what I'm saying. I'd go to him and say, you know what? You're going to start middle relief. If I want you to close, you'll do whatever the damn hell I tell you to do with $217 million.
Yeah.
Just shut up and pitch.
Yeah.
How about
see how that goes over in this day and age.
What?
You're going to go to David Price with all that money that's owed to him and just immediately infuriate him?
I'm not
going to
infuriate him. I'm not going to kiss his backside, though.
I'm not asking you to, but you can't go and just say, you'll do what I say.
Come here, David. Let me give you a hug first. Let's hug it out. Let's hug it out like the millennials do, right, Brady? Let's all give a big group hug like the millennials like to do.
Everyone gets a medal,
everybody,
boys.
Give a big hug before we run out there and play some baseball. Group hug now, everybody, on three.
See, I think that's totally a short-sighted way of looking at it. Number one, David Price is not a millennial.
I'm just saying that's the
okay,
way
but David Price is not a millennial.
No, he's not. He's not a millennial.
So he would be of your rough and tumble generation.
I would say millennial for baseball terms because of the whole we're bringing in core to relate to the young players.
By baseball
terms,
he's a statue. Right. He's over 30. By baseball terms, he's old.
Okay,
go ahead. So that's wrong again.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's okay to go in there and work on personal relationships. You saw Jerry Maguire, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And what was the tenet of that movie? More personal attention. Less clients, but more intimate relationships. And it worked out pretty well for Jerry Maguire, didn't it? It didn't work out so well for your buddy Jay Moore Bob Sugar.
What happened to tough love? The tough love isn't around anymore? No, I guess it did.
Tough love is around, but he's never managed David Price, so he's never had a reason to exhibit that tough love.
What's Cora going to do, stand in front of the media and say, what a jackass he was last year? That better change. I mean, who would ever say that 30 years ago or 3 days ago?
I'm going to pretend I'm Cora. Ask me about Price. Oh, you want to know about Price? I'm going to tell you what. You know, he had some injuries last year. I'm thankful he didn't have anything major.
Okay. It's good so far.
Hopefully he's going to come back strong and be a big part of this team.
Yeah.
If we need him to start, he'll start. If I need him in middle relief, he'll be in middle relief. If I need him to close, he'll close. If I need him to run the bases, he'll run the bases.
Okay.
That's it.
There's nothing there
that you said
that's wrong.
Not suck it up to him. And I've got out of my way to talk to him first. Because him and Pedroia, I've got to talk to them. Because they're like albatross around my neck, for crying out loud.
Well, they're important
That's why
pieces.
They did. Unbelievable.
They're important. They're probably two of the most important pieces going forward. You've got to get right with them immediately.
That's what he was thinking. That's in his head. Brady, get to the newest varsity sport going on here in Vermont. This is absolutely incredible.
Cool. I thought this was pretty interesting. Starting in the spring of 2019 in Vermont, Ultimate Frisbee will now be a spring high school sport offered at the varsity level. It looks like 20 schools approximately across the state are going to be involved in it. But starting in spring of 2019, Ultimate Frisbee coming to the state of Vermont.
I'm going to admit something here. I don't know how to play Ultimate Frisbee. Okay. I've played it, but I don't know how. I just know that you throw it and you run a couple of steps and you throw it again.
No, so basically, once you catch it, you can't.
You can't,
Oh, you can't.
Once you catch it.
You got to stop.
So that basically you
can't tackle anybody, right?
No, you're playing on. It's a little bit smaller than a football field. It's right. 7-on-7,
right?
And so you play for you're throwing the frisbee and trying to complete passes. And once you catch it, you have to stay
Stop.
Stationary, and you're trying to get it down into the end zone.
Right. But you can't hit or fight anybody.
No, you just you either intercept the frisbee or the frisbee hits the ground and it's a turnover.
Right. I don't know if that's my sport.
I'll tell you. Yeah, you think for the guy who just stands at the 3-point line all day. No, believe me, my knees hurt just thinking about that sport. But I'll tell you what, it's not something that's come along over the last couple of years. I mean, I remember ultimate frisbee was huge when I was in college. 114
years
ago. Yes,
it was. I remember it being back then. My question is this going to be more popular? And don't take this wrong, Brady. Than baseball? Because, I mean, we don't have baseball at UVM. Remember the signs, bring it back. And, you know, who knows if it doesn't become, how popular can this become?
My question is, no, I don't think initially it will be more popular than baseball. I think for a sport to overtake baseball or lacrosse or these other spring sports, you would have to have a groundswell at the youth level to get kids playing this sport all along, right? Kids are playing baseball by 5 years old. Kids are playing lacrosse by 5 years old. Kids are playing softball by 5 years old. Those interests are deeply rooted
soccer,
by the time.
Even, yeah.
Well, soccer's not a spring sport.
Well, okay.
So by the time they get to the high school level to play varsity, they've already got their first love. So I think this is going to be initially more of overfill, kids that aren't playing something in the fall already, or kids that aren't on a team that want to be on a team. But that said, if this sport starts to take off at the youth level, I could see 15, 20 years from now, once that youth culture is established, it being very popular because it is fun.
Ultimate frisbee to me has always been something that high school and college kids loved. And everybody that I ever knew that played it, and that's a lot of people, were somewhere between 14 and about 22. And you're right. Are people playing ultimate frisbee at the age of 7? Are they going to have youth leagues set up?
My question is this. One, can there be any records? Like, look at that guy. That's Timmy. He's got 15 touchdowns. I don't know whatever.
Yes, I think of course
there is. There's stats for ultimate.
And two, what happened to hacky sack?
Speaking of college,
well, actually, that wasn't a sport. What was that? A recreation? I don't even know what the hell that was.
Well, the other thing. So we're talking about high school here. We're not talking. This is going to be
a high school varsity.
Okay, so there's
going
to be leagues and everything. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be about 20 teams. It says here.
Yeah, 20 teams. I think this is very cool.
Yeah.
I worry, in quotes, about it overtaking sports like baseball eventually. But again, early on, I think it's going to be more. You just say you've got a football player who wants to stay in shape, but he doesn't play a spring sport as it is like baseball or lacrosse. Something for him to do that's athletic to keep in shape. Same thing for a soccer player. I don't think until you get a youth movement, you're going to start to overtake sports. I think it's going to be more extra fill.
Do you want to coach? Would you like to coach one of the teams out there?
Okay. Are you telling what? Tell me again. What season is this sport
going to take? Spring.
Okay. We're fine then. I didn't want it to affect football because football is hanging in the balance in a lot of schools in this state.
Rich,
just ask the kids over at Oxbow.
What would happen if they said, Rich, we need you to call the play-by-play of the Frisbee Championships? What do you say?
Frisbee.
He throws the Frisbee to the other guy who caught it, and he throws the Frisbee who throws it to another guy who throws the Frisbee into the end zone for a touchdown.
That's all correct, except I would remember. Hopefully they'd have numbers on their back.
Would you say, oh, look at that throw of the Frisbee. It's like a wounded duck. Who throws a Frisbee like that?
You'd be talking about the way they throw it. Oh, he uses a backhand grip. Right. He uses a forehand grip.
Wow.
He throws it one-handed.
What about if you, that's a diving catch there. What about if you throw it through your legs and you could
chance. You'll like it.
I'm just saying.
Fun. Well,
it's fun.
Requires athleticism.
I can't play
it
anymore, but I've seen a lot of ultimate frisbee.
Next
and
will
it's
be
fun.
Frisbee golf.
But is Whammo still the?
I don't know.
Maker of frisbee. I think that's
still
like
living
the
in the 40s.
I don't know. I don't know who makes frisbees. Is somebody on the line?
Yeah, we got John in Richmond.
John in Richmond. You're on 101.3 ESPN. What's going on, John?
Hey guys. I'm a retired ultimate player.
Okay.
In my late 50s, my knees got to where I had to either give up ultimate or skiing.
Oh, boy. It must have been tough to give up that frisbee.
I won't tell you which I'd give up, but go ahead.
So I gave up the ultimate, but first of all, frisbee is a brand name from Whammo, and it's not used in competitive ultimate anymore. They do make one, but Discraft and other manufacturers make them. As far as youth ultimate, it's throwing a disc properly is very hard for kids to do. It's something you tend to grow into when you're more in high school.
Yeah. I think they should use a boomerang.
Yeah, so see, I think it will be tough to supplant, to take athletes out of sports that they've been playing their whole lives. Now we're getting people texting in, Brady, you actually get three steps. It's not catch and stop.
I told you.
Look, catch and three steps, catch and stop.
No wonder.
It's called momentum.
You travel.
Get a few
That's
steps.
A travel on Brady.
So.
Yeah, I told you that. You have to, you're allowed to take, I said two steps. I thought it was two steps.
Look, regardless, cool sport, cool initiative. I don't think it takes the place of spring sports that are already well established.
Is it going to be boys teams and girls teams, or they get to play on the team together?
Now, you could. Now that's an interesting question.
At first,
especially, that is a sport you can play co-ed.
Yes, absolutely.
I would say as long as the number of men and women on the field at the same time are equal.
Is there any sports that are co-ed that we have that are varsity sports?
Only they play mixed doubles in tennis? And
yes,
at least
they do. Yeah, yes, they do. Good call there.
I've seen a couple of female kickers on teams around.
Well, yeah, that's not co-ed teams.
I see what you mean.
Okay. I've seen men play field hockey because the school didn't offer it. I've seen
with the women,
right? Because it's not a sport offered to guys.
I haven't seen that.
I've seen that. I've seen girls play on boys this golf teams.
Well, yes. That's a little bit different.
Mixed doubles tennis is the answer going for.
This could be the first. Maybe it will become more popular. This will be the first sport, high school or college, that you would have actually co-ed, barring the tennis. People could get into that, you know, where men and women play together. That could be very appealing to a lot of people.
I think it would be very cool.
Two things I think are important here.
Someone said track. That's not.
That's not.
No.
You score maybe based on
the
guy's
track.
Team or girl team, but
no,
I don't think I don't see mixed relays happening.
No. But that would be interesting if they did have that. Yeah. I would watch that. Yeah.
The fact that it's starting with 20 schools is a very good sign. I mean, it's not like they're just doing this as sort of an exhibition. They've been doing it for a couple of years. They've built up a lot of interest. And I don't think it's going to be a terribly expensive sport to implement.
I don't think so either.
I mean, you've got the fields are already there. Just play.
Yeah, I'm curious.
The travel expenses is about it.
I'm curious to see. What kind of uniforms do you wear? It's all about the uniforms, those Nike
Tearaways. I would assume probably the same uniforms as
you got to have special uniforms. Man, you got to have something special.
I would think soccer-type uniforms.
Yeah, you got to have something. You got to go think outside the box. Come on.
What do you want, guys to wear dresses or something? I mean, what are we talking about here?
I don't know. Give me a chance to think about that for a second. Brady, what do we got the last segment coming up?
Patriots injury report at practice today. They also made a couple of moves. IR, free agency, the whole lot.
All right, all that next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Hey.
And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich Arnie and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Last story standing coming up in about 10 minutes from now. Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley game night tonight?
Well, we enter the Cat's Den, as we do every Tuesday.
Yeah.
UVM Sports. We'll hear from the voice of Kentucky basketball as we get ready for the big season opening game between the Wildcats and UVM on Sunday. And we'll also hear from UVM soccer coach Rob Dow as they won the America East regular season title.
I got the final score 76-70 for Vermont over Kentucky.
Yeah, I will admit you have been picking Vermont in this game for
picking,
a month.
Why is that so shocking? I'm trying to get the line on that. I'm going to have to call one of my Vegas buddies on that one.
I think it would be very shocking, but it would not be completely out of the realm of possibility.
It would be shocking. What bothers me is if they do beat Kentucky, or when they do beat Kentucky, I feel like they won't be in the top 25, and that's baloney. You see, that's what bothers me the most. I don't think people know what they're doing when they vote in the college basketball.
I was just going to say the one thing they've got to do at UVM is get healthy. I mean, I don't know what the latest on Ernie Duncan and Trey Bill Haynes is, but you absolutely must have them going forward.
Well, that's what I was going to say also, that those guys did not play in the last exhibition game, and it was preventative. It was day-to-day, but you're hoping they're 100% and not even just 85%.
I thought Kentucky played a exhibition game. You know, everybody plays like an exhibition game, a preseason
Vermont
game.
Just played three.
And they dominated some Division II team. But
they did.
Did State or something.
It was some baloney. But I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be Sunday during football, so may fall under the radar.
Well, it's lucky for us here. That game's 3:30, but the Patriots play at 8:30 that night.
Perfect.
So the Patriots play at 8:30 that night against Denver, but the Kentucky UVM game is 3:30, and you can listen to both of them. Right right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Yeah, because you put Jordan in progress. I'm like, it's not going to be yeah.
The pregame show.
Okay, remember, the pregame is 17 hours.
Okay, but they won't. The games won't conflict, right?
So, right.
Yeah, that's
no confliction on the games at all.
That's going to be fine.
How's that for a doubleheader?
That's awesome.
Wow.
That is going to be a lot of fun. I wish. Could you imagine if Kentucky was coming up here? Oh my goodness, man! Can you imagine how great would that be? Who wants to scalp tickets, man? That'd be fantastic. Brady, what's going on with the Patriots?
Yeah, Patriots had some interesting news at practice today. Chris Hogan, Marcus Cannon, Nate Solder all not practicing today. Shay McClellan also now looks like he'll be out for the season. So start on that side. We talked to Zach Cox just 45 minutes ago. Doesn't look like Hogan plays this weekend. The big one is Solder and Cannon. For as bad as Denver's looked, you're talking about two starting offensive linemen potentially not being 100% or out, even in some cases, maybe going into a game against Denver with a pretty good defense and still a good pass rush.
You know, in a league where you go from week to week because you never know what's going to happen, even when you're like a 7 to 10 point favorite, believe me, there's no worries that the Patriots are going to lose. I just don't feel that. And I know that's stupid to say. You could lose.
You pick the Patriots to lose every week.
I know that.
And you're not going this week.
I'm not going to do that this week. I'm going to go ahead and do the reverse. I'm doing the reverse psychology, Rich.
Nice.
How about that one? Thank you.
You heard it here. Yes. You're expecting the Patriots to win a football game.
I wave the white flag on Denver.
I'll tell you, though. I mean, it's a good thing Denver's offense stinks because I don't feel like we're looking at a 41-38 kind of final in this game.
No,
it just doesn't.
Geez,
The Patriots, but they're so banged up as a Pats fan. It was just like, when is the bye week? It can't happen fast enough. We've got to get everybody healthy. And now we're in, you know, we finished the bye week. We're onto a Tuesday getting ready for a Sunday game. And it seems like everybody's still out and not improving.
This before the season, I had this as a loss when we were just going win,
loss. Too.
Before the season, the Broncos going to Denver? Forget about it.
This
ain't going to happen.
Pittsburgh and probably one of the Buffaloes.
Was not going to happen. And then how things quickly change. And, of course, it becomes one of the easiest schedules in all the NFL. So there
of course.
You go. Brady, do you want to get into Mecko Grimes a little bit? Or no, we don't have enough time on that.
Only if you want. Do you want to play what she said?
Yeah, I actually do. I think it's because I told a couple of buddies of mine nationally. And they both text back that she's a knucklehead. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right, Mecko Grimes' husband, Brent Grimes, is a defensive back for the Buccaneers. Pretty good one, too. Mecko Grimes is crazy, though. And she's apparently now a radio host that works at iHeartMedia.
Of course, if she's crazy.
That's where I work.
She's perfect for this job.
She was on The Breakfast Club, which is a very, very popular morning show. And she offered this little nugget about the NFL.
A lot of people don't know, but the reason Derek Carr got injured is because the Raiders offensive line allowed him to get injured because he was against them protesting. And they had a fight in the locker room before that Monday night game in the Red. Yes, I caught the tea, baby. They were fighting in the locker room, and that's the only all-black offensive line in the NFL is the Raiders.
Now, I've seen stuff like that in movies. That happens in real life.
That happened in real life. It just happened. So they were in the locker room. Derek Carr is a Bible thumper to the fullest. Mm-hmm. And so he was basically trying to force the players to read the Bible before the game and do all this stuff. And they were like, no, that's you. And so he was so upset about it when the whole offensive line was saying they were going to kneel. He was like, I'm not, no, you're not kneeling. No, this is America. You're going to stand for the flag and blah, blah, blah. And they got in a fight in the locker room. So when they came out to play, they basically had a plan like, you know what?
You don't want to kneel with us? We're going to make
you
kneel.
So this was last year?
This happened.
I thought Derek Carr got hurt last year, too.
No, he just came back last week.
Okay, gotcha.
He was injured. That was from that.
Could you imagine? I mean, if you're a Raider offensive lineman and you heard something like that, I may even sue over something.
Well, I mean, Mecko Grimes getting her 15 seconds of fame, but at the same point, she kind of brings up an interesting point. I mean, do you think there's a possibility that does divide some of these locker rooms?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it divides locker rooms. I don't think they're intentionally getting their quarterbacks injured.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
And they all came out and said rubbish, and she's wrong. Remember, he got injured not in that game against Washington on Sunday night, which she said was Monday, but it was a Sunday, and she got injured the week after that.
But I will say this. There's no doubt in my mind that somebody told her that. I don't think she's making that up off the top of her head. I believe that her husband told her that, and somebody told her husband that. I mean, am I making too much of that, or what? I believe that she feels like she's telling the truth. You understand that, don't you? She feels like
she says people have been talking about this for weeks, so we're all just catching up to it now.
Good luck to that. Let's get back to last story standing. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Brady, this is right up the millennials' alley. We brought this up earlier in the show for Last Story Standing a little bit. The Twitter was 140 characters. Now what is it going to go to?
280, and I think everybody's going to be in this selection by the end of the night, it looks like. Our station account is up to 280. I will try to keep us from not using that, though. I don't like the 280. I like the creativity of the 140 character limitation.
So why isn't everybody able to tweet 280 at the same time? Why didn't they just flip a switch?
Is it I don't know.
Yeah, you act like about that.
We'll get our engineer Jamie on it and see what he knows about Twitter's underworking.
Well, now I'm going to go ahead and try to tweet. It will tell me how many things I have left. Right?
Yes, it should.
It should tell you that. Yes.
Yeah, mine's not for some reason.
If it's going with a circular motion, it's not giving you the character. That means you've switched over.
Oh, so it doesn't tell you how many things you have left or anything like that?
I'm sure it will at some point, but at this very moment, it is not.
Okay,
Arnie, you could say twice as much.
The only
because I do have lots to say. I do have lots.
The only thing I like about this, and I read someone say this earlier on Twitter, is that it will make the interpretation of quotes easier. When you give quotes, whether it's political, sports, otherwise, there you can give a little more context to those quotes and things might not be misinterpreted or misrepresented as easily.
Instead of saying coming up in 5 minutes, I can say F-I-V-E.
Yes.
Instead of 5 minutes.
I was going to say, so you can't say, you can't do like the number four for four and all that. You could write everything out now.
F-O-U-R.
The grammar Nazis are going to be all over the place now if you do something like that.
I can just picture Arnie using like shorthand, like a 15-year-old girl. Want to
come exactly.
Over.
Over to the number at your house.
I still don't know where to put the hashtags and this and that and the circle part and all that stuff.
That's the stuff where they lose me. But I can tweet. But I can tweet pictures and all that stuff.
Right, but you don't put the hashtag.
I don't even know what that means.
Impressions and all that stuff.
I don't even know what that means.
So people can follow you and all that stuff. You don't have that. You know what
Richard
I mean?
Giving a great homage to your favorite commercial.
That's the funniest ad I've ever heard.
He loves the Papa Frank's commercial. Have you heard that?
No, I've not.
Yes, you've heard it.
It's a football ad. It talks about calling it audible, and she says, I don't even know what that means.
Well, we're in the new Lenny's commercial on TV. That was kind of funny. I saw that on TV.
For a half a second.
No,
all
like
I did was hear you yell something.
Well, shouldn't we get like free shoes for something like that? Like send us some shoes?
I think we should.
Yeah, or like one of those long-sleeve T-shirts or something.
We got to announce this. Our beard of the day.
Yes, the beard of the day.
It is Movember. It is No Shave November, so our beard of the day winner is Chris Tipsy Emerson.
Tipsy.
So
is it a good beard?
It's a good beard. It's very impressive.
We're getting like a lot of entries where you thought we weren't going to get any entries.
I didn't say we weren't going to get any. But our friends over at Vermont Beard and Mustache Company are giving out a prize pack at the end of the week to the best beard of the week. So we're doing this through November. I have used that shave oil.
You like it? Yeah, it is.
And now I'm getting to the point where I'm going to need that that beard conditioner because my beard's starting to go a little bit.
Yeah, Tipsy's got it. That's a doozy right there.
Who was our qualifier for the did we announce the qualifier for the
For the ultimate, or not the Choose Your All-Star game?
Yeah, yeah.
Hold on.
Many promotions. We can't even keep track of them all.
Well,
so much stuff to give
somebody
away.
Somebody tweeted in, let's do the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. Oh, wait a minute. It's not in Hawaii, so forget about that.
So we had four qualifiers today. Mike Fitzgerald from Colchester, Kevin Smith from South Burlington, Matt Roberts from Hyde Park, Vermont, and Justin Rebideau from Keysville, New York.
There you go.
Nice. Nice.
All over the place.
Nice. So
where is Hyde Park?
Hyde Park is it's in Lamoille County, out on 15 a little ways, or 100, depending on which way you want to go.
Okay.
Oh, real quick before we wrap up, I meant to tell you, one of my buddies that I play ball with, Brendan, the young kid.
Yes.
Had a heart attack, and he's only like 25 years old.
The guy who you say is better than me?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. He is good.
Right? Yeah, heart attack.
Is he okay?
Yeah, he's alive.
25?
Wow. Yeah.
Horrible.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, he'll be okay. That's why I challenged him to a 1-on-1 right now. I figure I could beat him. Stop. Come on. This is why people don't like me.
You're just wrong.
I am wrong. That is wrong.
Where did you come from?
I don't know. But at least he's okay, so I want to wish him.
You sure?
Yes.
You're going to feel like quite a jerk if he isn't.
Well, hopefully he's okay. Let's just go ahead and say that. Brady, what's coming up next?
We enter the Cats Den Champlain Valley game night. No interns to thank today.
No interns?
Intern Logan sick. Intern Julia studying for midterms.
Yes. Well, I'll be filling out their progress reports and turning that back in. We'll see how I grade. Well, right now they're on the C-minus D-plus range, so wow. They have a lot of work to do. That's coming up next for Brady, for Rich. I'm Marty right here on 101.3 ESPN.